From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Rob Blagojevich still insists he is innocent and that he never betrayed his oath of office.
They have limits on how long you can stay into a job. There's term limits on the jobs now, right? So now my job is, I've been given the jurisdiction to sweep and mop two floors. So my jurisdiction has shrunk from the fifth biggest state in America to these two floors. But I don't care what anybody says. So I believe in clean government and I believe in clean floors.
I would say that the first couple of years were super hard and super distressing. You know, every single birthday and every single Christmas and Halloween and every single event that would go by and, you know, Rod wouldn't be there. It was so heartbreaking. But the sad part is right now it's almost like you don't expect him to be there because he's been gone for, you know, tomorrow is Amy's 21st birthday. And so this is the sixth birthday that he's missed. So it's like you're not looking for him at the table anymore.
That's the former First Lady, Patty Blagojevich. Before that, her husband, the imprisoned former governor, Rod Blagojevich. In fact, Blagojevich was interviewed by both Chicago Magazine and WMAQ-TV, and we thank WMAQ-TV in Chicago for that audio. Those interviews airing this week, we're going to talk about what was said during those, and also some high-level departures from state government announced this week. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and I'm joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler. Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us today in our State House Bureau, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, and Doug Finke, State House reporter for Gatehouse Media. Doug, thanks for being with us again.
Glad to be here.
And Doug and Brian, I'll throw it to you first. We got to hear from Rod Blagojevich. And you know, there's an old saying about how can we miss you when you won't go away? And Rod Blagojevich, for a long time, even after being governor, was not out of the limelight. He was on national TV shows. He was on Celebrity Apprentice, of course, with Donald Trump, and seemed to be everywhere. But he's certainly been quiet since he started his federal prison sentence. What did we learn, if anything, from these interviews this week?
Well, we learned what he's doing these days. We learned about some of his time behind bars, what it's like being in prison, what it's like being in both a federal low-security prison, which, despite the name, doesn't actually sound very pleasant. You know, he talked about how when he first went there, there were some of the prison officials advised him to hook up with a certain group of people, so there were very intense racial politics on the yard after he was spotted walking with an African-American person. And to hear Blagojevich tell it, he went and talked to the people that the prison officials suggested. Turns out they were white supremacists, so he said he decided to go a different way and just kind of keep to himself for the most part. So just learn what it's like behind bars. We learned he still thinks that he got a raw deal. He still maintains his innocence. But he is, the number of legal options to him are quickly closing. Many, many doors have been closed already. He is still apparently making a last-ditch pitch to the U.S. Supreme Court. And other than that, you know, it'd have to be for a pardon or some sort of post-conviction appeal, which typically do not do very well.
There was a line in the, or quote in the Chicago Magazine version of this where he said, I was a good governor, or words to that effect anyway. And it struck me, particularly because there was a story about his former deputy governor, Brad Tusk, that came out this last week, talking about his success in the venture capital field. But earlier this year, there was another story where Tusk was quoted about his days working for Blagojevich. And he had some very unkind things to say, and just that he said the man was work adverse and wasn't willing to do what was necessary to be a good governor. And yet here's a man who is was convicted for what he did as governor and has spent 5.5 years behind bars and still says, I was a good governor.
I've said this. I think, Doug, the story you're talking about was kind of framed as it's early in the Trump administration. We were seeing a lot of chaos in Washington, and this was like advice for dealing with a boss who is difficult or challenging work environment like that. And he talked about how difficult it was to get Blagojevich to focus on the tasks of governing. I was reminded in one of the stories this week, pegged to this interview, that, you know, there were reporters who would camp out outside Blagojevich's house and saw that he really only left to go jogging. He was not a regular fixture, let alone in Springfield, but even in the Thompson Center, where the governor's administration is headquartered in Chicago. And I have long said that I think the real damage done by Blagojevich to the state of Illinois was not the things for which he was actually convicted, as bad as trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat was, and, you know, a lot of the other allegations that didn't result in charges, but there were certainly coverage of allegations of political hiring and attempts to solicit donations for, you know, in exchange for state contracts and things like that. All of that is bad, but it's not as bad as his refusal to reckon with the financial problems of state government and either drastically cut spending or raise taxes and do a balanced budget. You know, we had the pension holidays started during the Blagojevich era, and with the help of the legislature and sometimes Republicans in the legislature, too, we should remember. It wasn't just Democrats, although certainly mostly Democrats in Blagojevich. Made some terrible decisions that we are still dealing with the repercussions of today in terms of both the regular state budget as well as the pension deficit.
And Charlie, you agree with that his legacy, it goes beyond just maybe the things that were done, but also the fact of what we're dealing with today. And even, I think in some cases, maybe the public's view of government.
Yeah, because I think, as Brian said, the finances really went down the tubes. Now, part of it was he was governor during the Great Recession, and our revenues dropped precipitously. But rather than, for example, midway through the decade, rather than make deep spending cuts or raise revenues, the lawmakers and the governor decided to shortchange the statutorily required pension payment by $2.1 billion over 2 years. And so that's $2+ billion that was not invested, did not earn returns, and that contributed to the pension liabilities growth. He had some good ideas. I would give him credit for stuff that he did in the renewable energy area and for his efforts to expand the children's health insurance program, provide preschool for everyone. The difficulty was all these great ideas had price tags, and he did not want to take the heat for either cutting something else or raising additional revenues to cover the cost of these new programs he wanted to implement. And he also ran afoul of the General Assembly. He tried to do some stuff in the healthcare area and change rules and regulations. And the way the power sharing is set up, the legislature passes a law. Frequently, it's left up to the agencies to fill in the blanks, get into the nitty-gritty details, and then the legislature, through its Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, goes over those rules and regulations to see if the agency is, in fact, carrying out what the legislature's desires were. And in a couple of instances, JCAR said, no, that doesn't comport with what you're supposed to be doing. Blagojevich went ahead and did it anyway. As a matter of fact, in the impeachment resolution that was adopted by the House leading to its ouster by the Senate, there were something like a dozen or so different articles, and four or five of them had nothing to do with alleged criminal activity, but it had to do with violation of the separation of powers. For example, ignoring JCAR on that health stuff.
I still remember the night he was removed from office, and there was this collective exhale by the state of Illinois and certainly people in the building and around state government that this had held, you know, had hung over the heads of everybody for a good month and a half, the trial and then the impeachment. But really, for months, even years leading up to that, a lot of people, I think, had tired of Rod Blagojevich. That being said, when you hear these types of interviews and you hear the family talk and you hear Patty Blagojevich talk about the kids missing their father, I think in there it was said that he only gets to see the family about three times a year. Is there empathy for him? Doug, would you, you know, do you feel from the people you've dealt with in the past, or is there any empathy for this guy, even though people may have felt he was not a good governor and maybe people were ready to see him go and get out of office?
I think there is empathy for the family. Certainly what they've gone through, they didn't tell Blagojevich to do what he did. And so they are the victims of what he did and the consequences of that. So I think there's certainly a fair amount of empathy, certainly for his children and for his wife. I sense that there is still a strong lingering dislike of Blagojevich as a person. I think, yes, people can soften a little bit on that, but I think there's still a lot of residual, basically relief that the guy is not here anymore.
Brian, you can also make an argument over whether or not the sentence he is serving is fair for the crimes committed.
Yeah, no, I mean, he points out in one of these interviews that Al Capone was sentenced to less time than he was. Of course, Al Capone was sentenced for a tax violation, not for public corruption and not for all the murders that he committed or had ordered as a mobster. But it was a longer sentence than George Ryan got, former governor. It certainly is a long sentence by white-collar standards. And, you know, he talked in this interview about, you know, that when you have that moment of realization. He said he had an early meeting with one of the I can't remember the term for like a probation officer or something like that, who pointed out, okay, your exit date is in, it was 2023, 24 or something. He said that's when it really began to sink in, how long this cert term for him would be. But one thing I do think is worth noting, though, is how things have changed from back then. I remember Blagojevich made a comment saying legislators were spending like drunken sailors. And in my memory, at least, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, you were following it more closely than I was then. That was a huge kind of blow up of incivility, right? It's, oh, my gosh, the governor says that about the legislators. What is going on? And we had, you know, then we had these overtime sessions that would go, you know, Illinois didn't have a budget for like a month or two. It was crazy. Can you imagine that? And now we've gone, you know, we had two years without a budget. And we have a governor who routinely says the leaders of the Democratic Party are corrupt and, you know, enrich themselves at the, you know, in their law practice at the expense of state government. So I do think that he was perhaps a forerunner of some of the nastiness we've seen and the dysfunction we've seen in Illinois government today.
Well, part of the problem that Blagojevich had was that he lost the trust. And that's the same problem that Rauner has dealing with the legislative leaders. They just don't trust the guy. Blagojevich blew it probably the summer after his election, after his inauguration. He came in with some budget proposals that involved giving great power to his director of the Office of Management and Budget in terms of what to cut, where to take money from. The General Assembly gave him these powers. And later, when there was a need to cut some budgets, he apparently reached agreements with the other constitutional officers about how much would be cut, and then he double-crossed them, and he cut a lot more. I remember my class went for a press conference that fall with Jesse White. And somebody asked Jesse White, the Secretary of State, what do you think of Rob Blagojevich? And Jesse White said, he's a liar. And I was shocked. Anyone who's met Jesse White knows he's about the most courteous, most civil, most gentlemanly person you'll ever meet. And here he is saying flat out the governor is a liar. And it's because the governor said to him, here's how much we'll cut. And then a couple hours later, he cut twice as much. And once he lost that trust, it was all downhill. As a matter of fact, for all the criticism that House Speaker Michael Madigan gets, Madigan acted as a brake on some of the things that Blagojevich wanted to do.
Let's move on to talk about some people who have now announced they're leaving state government or will be leaving soon. And I'm going to start with Barbara Flynn Curry. Charlie, she's a longtime state representative from Chicago, and she's been the House Majority Leader, pretty much the right-hand person for House Speaker Michael Madigan for a long time now. She's announced she will not seek re-election. This is a surprise to you?
I guess it is, in the sense that I looked at Barbara Flynn Curry as sort of, what would you say, just kind of a rock who's always going to be there. She's a very, very brilliant individual. She knows legislative process, but more importantly, she knows public policy. She knows how to work with people. And I've watched her. I watched her up close as a reporter from the time she entered the General Assembly. I want to say it was around 1977, I believe. And now, as a professor at the university, I've watched her kind of from afar. But she's always been a very civil, very courteous person, and a really I think, one of the stars of the legislature. So I'm sorry to see her retire, although she says that she wants to do other things, and I guess I could understand that. And in this current climate of the relentless attacks, the hostility, the incivility, I can see how someone who remembers the, quote, good old days when people treated each other with courtesy, how somebody might be sick of this and decide it's time to move on.
And, Doug, we're seeing a lot of people moving on and bringing up that issue that Charlie just raised, that's sort of become a more toxic atmosphere. You know, what does this mean going forward? It seems like a lot of people who, you know, on both sides who have been around for a while and even been considered maybe more moderate, maybe somebody who can work with each party, they're taking off.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, these people have been considered moderates and able to work across the aisle with each other. And if they're leaving, you have to wonder who is going to be taking their place. Is the bankroll going to go behind candidates who vow never to compromise and basically believe the other side is the enemy? And if that is the case, if we get moderates replaced by hardliners, we're going to, the last 2 years gridlock is going to be nothing. It's going to be that way going forward.
And, of course, we have an attorney general, Lisa Madigan. She's been in that office a long time. At one point, talked about being the governor candidate. There's news coming out as we sat down to record this, Brian, that she's not going to seek re-election.
Yeah, she issued a statement saying, after serving as Illinois attorney general for over 14 years, today I'm announcing I will not seek re-election. That came out late Friday morning. She says does not plan to seek any other office next year. She has been the subject of much speculation over the years. Would she run for the U.S. Senate? Would she run for governor? But at this point, she says she's been vague about what she will do next, but just says she does not plan to seek re-election.
And we'll talk more about that in coming shows as we hear more from, what led to her make that decision. Another change happening this week, the governor's education point person, Beth Purvis, is also going to be leaving, Brian. And I guess that may not be a shock in the sense they got this big education package through the legislature. So maybe, mission accomplished, I guess you could say, if that's the case. But anyway, her leaving, what do you read into that? Anything?
I don't know that I really particularly too much into this. Like you said, she was brought in to kind of help reshape the education landscape in Illinois as Governor Rauner saw it. Governor Rauner, of course, has been a big advocate for what he calls school choice, vouchers, that sort of thing. There's literally a charter school named after him in Chicago. But Beth Purvis was his point person. She made a lot of money. She was paid $250,000 a year by the state, much more than the governor's salary, although Governor Rauner says he doesn't take a salary. But she, at times she was a source of controversy. Democrats complained that her salary was being paid out of the Department of Human Service budget, even as Rauner was trying to cut DHS programs. But ultimately, she did get bipartisan praise for her work on an education funding reform. I can't remember if it was a commission or a task force, but this big group of people that came up with a framework for what did eventually become the way that Illinois is changing its school funding formula. Not a surprise that, once you spend all this effort and time working on that, that you then head for the exit.
Well, the governor's been out of the country. He's been on a trade mission, he's calling it, to Asia over the last several days. And at the same time, there's some changes going on in his office. And Brian and Doug, I'll leave this to you, but he's been reorganizing his policy staff. What's taking place there, and will people even notice that that's happening?
I don't think they'll notice much on the outside, frankly. So maybe we need to back up a little bit and point out that we had the governor fire a significant part of his staff, the communication staff, as well as some administrative operations people over the summer after the budget vote came down, and his veto was very quickly overridden by the legislature. He brought in a number of people from the Illinois Policy Institute, a very conservative advocacy organization here in Illinois, part of the statewide network called the State Policy Network that gets a lot of funding from the Koch brothers, and he brought them into his administration. That itself proved to be problematic for him in some ways. He ended up firing that communication staff. And so now he is once again just sort of reorganizing his policy staff. There have been people who have read into this that is he is kind of sidelining his chief of staff, who is the former one of the top people at the Policy Institute, Christina Rasmussen. Of course, she and other people in the administration say that's not what this is about. But, you know, this is just shows the continued effort. You know, the governor was headed into the summer without a state budget and, you know, had a clear message that Speaker Madigan is terrible and he's responsible for everything wrong in Illinois. And then for the last couple of months, the news stories have just been about the mismanagement and the dysfunction in the governor's office. And I think this is just part of his continued efforts to reset things and try and get control of the narrative of state government again.
And Doug, things have settled down a little bit. I mean, we got the budget in place, and of course now they have an education law that's in place, funding law that's in place as well, and money's going out to schools. So is this reboot basically that you're seeing in behind the scenes in the governor's office, is that really problematic for him? I mean, he's heading into an election year, of course, but this seems like this might be the time to do it if you feel like it needs to be done.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, yes, he vetoed the budget and he had his objections to the school funding reform thing. But now he has a budget he can work with, even over his objections. He's got school funding reform that, you know, right after he signed that into law, he had cut an ad touting the fact that they did that. He's got stuff that he can run on successfully. You know, the idea of restructuring the lines on a flow chart in your office organization doesn't really strike me as real exciting, but that's me.
I did mention the governor has been overseas on this trip. And Charlie, I bring you in on this because this is something that used to happen a lot more. I would say certainly from Blagojevich on, we've not seen that much overseas travel from governors. And I don't know if there's exactly a reason for that. Could be financial in some cases. Do they accomplish what they set out to do with these?
Yeah, the kind of the norm when Governor Thompson was in office was that he would be globetrotting all over the place on a regular basis, trying to bring industry from overseas to Illinois, and he had some success. And I guess it's kind of what you have to do in this day and age is try and get out there and hustle. I know just this past week, the legislature in Wisconsin approved $3 billion in tax credits and tax breaks for Foxconn, which is going to put a massive plant to manufacture electronic components in southeastern Wisconsin. And it's the largest tax break or largest gift ever given to a foreign industry by any state in the U.S. And now Illinois is in the running, we hope, for a huge Amazon, basically the headquarters, and they're looking at the Chicago area. And that would be a massive investment. Now, Illinoisans don't have to go overseas to recruit Amazon because it's a United States company. But the governor is in Japan. Japan has some interests here. And we also export a lot of materials, particularly agricultural goods, to the Far East. And so it makes sense in my mind for a governor to be out there making those kinds of contacts. The governors don't do the nitty-gritty stuff of working out all the details of how the shipment's going to work or how the factory's going to be built. But it's kind of like being a salesman for your state and attempting to convince decision makers in other states or around the world that your state is a good place for them to come and do business.
And Brian, for years now, the governor has not really been promoting the state. He's almost been kind of tearing down, saying the state's tax structure and other things really have not made it attractive for business. So is this a bit of a pivot he's having to make to go over there and try to sell Illinois to someone else?
Right. Well, yeah, this is, again, I think you have to look at this in the context of his election year coming back up. He, you know, seems to be gearing up to run for re-election, although he has not held a formal announcement. He's basically indicated he would. And you spend a couple of years saying how terrible Illinois is as a place to do business, and then you need to go overseas and try and sell it. You know, you can also see this messaging change with the way the employment figures come out every month from his Department of Employment Security. You know, they release the percentage. What did it change? Did we get more jobs? And it's been very pessimistic. Even when the unemployment rate has been continuing to get better and better, they'll say, well, we're still adding jobs more slowly, or we still don't have as many jobs as we did in the year 2000. They find all these different ways of contextualizing the statistics to try and make it look bad. Of course, now that we're heading into the reelection, he's going to want to presumably start taking credit for some, you know, positive things. I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to see that change in his messaging pivot a little bit. But it's an interesting balance he has to strike.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Doug, let's start with you.
State income tax revenues are from the tax increase are beginning to flow into state coffers, but so far they have not made much of a dent on the bill backlog, which still is fluctuating around $15 billion. These are numbers from the tax revenues are numbers from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. They agree with the comptroller's office that it's still going to be several more weeks, a couple months perhaps, before we see the full impact of the tax increase and help pay down the bill backlog.
Charlie?
Well, along those lines, the commission also released its annual report looking at gambling in the state of Illinois, and they pointed out that the state collected slightly more than $300 million in tax revenues from nearly 27,000 video terminals during the fiscal year that ended June 30th, and that's up from the roughly $256 million of a year before. Local governments reined in $60 million in revenues, and Springfield once again leads the state in the number of video terminals with 635 in our little community, so you don't have to walk very far to find one.
And Brian?
Yeah, we got word this week that gubernatorial candidate Chris Kennedy on the Democratic side has selected Ra Joy to be his running mate. Joy is what you'd call a good government activist. He worked on the Change Illinois project to try and change the district maps here. He was involved in the automatic voter registration drive, I believe, in Illinois. And he has a very interesting personal story. This summer, his adult son was murdered during somebody was trying to steal his cell phone. And he said after that happened, he was bereft and reaching out to people to just talk to them about it. He said he thought of Chris Kennedy at that time. Kennedy's father, of course, was RFK, who was assassinated in 1968. So an interesting pairing there. And, I think the last major top-tier candidate for governor on the Democratic side to announce his running mate.
Members of our broadcast for this week included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.